And now, sitting in for Dana Rodriguez is Joshua Cosman.
Thank you very much, Debbie, and welcome everybody to another hour of questions and answers here on Minds Over Matter, which is, as you know, the Bay Area's favorite quiz, call-in quiz show. And I emphasize call-in because we are nothing without you. If you don't call in, we're just going to sit here looking like dopes. And it won't matter that we look like dopes because we're on the radio and you don't know what we look like. But we're going to sound like dopes, and that's going to be no fun for everyone. So give us a call. The number here to join us is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. We're here at KALW, your local public radio station, at 91.7 FM. And also, of course, on the internet at www.kalw.org. I'm here with Jerry Nachman in the studio. We're going to start with a round of introductions and a round of questions, and maybe at some point in the proceedings, Mr. Dana Rodriguez, our fearless leader, will put in an appearance. But for now, we're going to be the two-legged stool of call-in radio. So take it away, Jerry. And I have never been in this chair in this capacity. So I start with the introductions. The first introduction is Jerry Nachman believes that the charade has gone on long enough and has made the tough decision to change genders. From now on, he asks all callers to address him as Tiffany.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I started to call you Dana. Josh. Joshua Cosman has such an unshakable faith in Jerry's, my comic gifts, that he, and then it says in brackets, please add a joke here. But I don't have any jokes, so.
All right. Well, I know you did your best.
Thank you.
So call in now. The lines are open. We're here at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And Jerry, why don't you start with a question and we'll throw it out there.
Okay. What writer has had more fiction published in The New Yorker than any other?
What writer has had more fiction published in The New Yorker than any other? Yeah. So my first guess is going to be that would be John Updike.
No?
That's not correct. So that was
a very good guess, though.
All right. Is it John Cheever? Is it John? No. It must be a John of some kind. No, I don't know. That's a good question. Do you want to narrow it down a little bit? Is he still alive?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He died maybe 30 years ago. So it's,
All right.
But in the 50s, 40s and 50s, he was maybe 60s also.
Uh-huh.
He was in there not every week, but he's in there a lot.
Okay. So if you know the answer to that or have a question for us, the number to join us is 415-841-4134. Let's waste no time and go right to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
This is Garrett from Union City.
Hello, Garrett. How are you?
All right. My first question is a classical music question.
Good.
Who did Andre Previn study conducting with? Yeah.
Let's think about this.
It was in the city. I'll give you that. It was in San Francisco.
It was in San Francisco.
Oh, the teacher that Dave Brubeck had?
Darius Milhaud, but studied. He would have studied. Brubeck studied composition with Darius Milhaud. I'm going to guess. No, it's too early. Is it Pierre Monteux, or is that too early?
Well, it was the early 50s.
It was the early 50s. So okay, later than that. Who did he study? He studied with him here in San Francisco.
Yeah, as a Frenchman. I'll give you that.
Yes, a Frenchman in the early 50s in San Francisco.
He was the conductor of the San Francisco Symphony at the time.
Who did you say?
I said Pierre Monteux, but that's earlier.
What did you say?
Pierre Monteux?
Yeah, give yourself a
bell. Oh, all right. I can't give myself a bell because Dane always brings the bells, and I forgot to get one. How about that? All right. It was Monteux, huh? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's my second question.
Go ahead.
I was looking at their hallway with all those pictures, and I was noticing a photo of Mike Farrell. Before he played B.J. Honeycutt on MASH, he previously played another doctor on another medical series. What was it?
Mike Farrell played B.J. Honeycutt, you say, on the TV show MASH.
But he also played a doctor on another television series before that.
I'm going to kick this over to Jerry, because I don't know television all that well, and I've never seen MASH.
I never have either, and I don't know.
But the question is, what doctor did he play on the show before MASH?
On what show he played a doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
It was based on two movies that starred Cliff Robertson in the early 60s.
Based on two movies that starred Cliff Robertson.
Gosh.
And the only Cliff Robertson movie I know is Charlie, and that's not helping us.
No, so this was on in the 60s or 70s?
No, this was the early 70s.
Early 70s. I'm sorry, I don't have any idea.
You know?
No.
The Interns.
The Interns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know that show? Who's on that show? I never heard of that show, but that's just me.
It only ran for one season at Robert Crawford. He played Dr. Peter Goldstone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Good. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Garrett. Here's a question for you. You know, we lost this week one of my very favorite writers in the world. That would be the great Elmore Leonard. And I spent some time trying to come up with a good Elmore Leonard question. This was the best I could do. Two of the most notable film adaptations of Elmore Leonard novels were Steven Soderbergh's 1998 movie Out of Sight and Jackie Brown, which was Quentin Tarantino's adaptation of Rum Punch. They were both in production at the same time, which is the reason that the same actor played Federal Agent Ray Nicolette in both movies, one of them an uncredited performance. Yeah, this is one of those, if you know it, you know, if you've seen these movies.
Where's Dana when we really need
Dana,
him?
Well, we don't know.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I'll leave that out there. If you know who it was that played Ray Nicolette in both of those Elmore Leonard adaptations, Out of Sight by the Steven Soderbergh film with George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez. Jerry's destroying the studio even while we speak. And Jackie Brown, which was Quentin Tarantino's adaptation of Rum Punch with the great Pam Grier in the title role. Give us a call if you know the answer to that, or if you have a question for us, or if you can tell Jerry how to reassemble his microphone remotely over the telephone. Let's go to a call.
Hi, guys. Good evening.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Okay. I have a question. How high is the sky?
How high is the sky?
Yeah.
How deep is the ocean?
That's what I was going to say. I knew there was a lyrics, and I couldn't get it.
Right.
How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky?
Yeah.
So
that would be another question, too, but I don't have the answer to that. But there is a depth to the ocean, too.
Is it 120 miles?
Close.
I just heard that on another public radio quiz show this afternoon.
She did, too, probably.
Yeah, I did.
Is that right? You were listening to, what's it called? Yeah. Wasn't it 120 miles that they said was that where outer space starts? All right, 100, 140, what are we looking for?
126.
Oh, come on, that was pretty close.
We have a 10% rule.
All right, I'm going to give myself a
126 miles.
A bell.
Till the atmosphere ends.
Uh-huh.
In space.
All right, good to know.
Okay, very good, thank you.
Thanks. And next call, please. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello?
Hi, welcome.
Hi, couple things. If you were serious about your sexual re-identification, I want to say congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome. I have a worker whose twin brother and he became women from another country, and they're very happy at it. And they even showed me their before and after pictures and stuff. It was pretty amazing. I mean, they're surgical before and after.
Do you have a question, though?
Sure, I do.
Okay.
I have an answer, maybe.
Okay.
I think it's off kilter, but the New Yorker question,
was
it Dashiell Hammett?
No, it was not.
Good guess, though.
I don't know if he ever published in the New Yorker, but maybe.
I don't know.
But no, it was not him.
He published articles, but I don't think the New Yorker.
Yeah, it was not him.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is Minds Over Matter here on KALW, your local public radio station in San Francisco. This is Joshua Cosman sitting in for Dana Rodriguez, who I guess is trapped somewhere on the Bay Bridge. We don't know. He just decided not to show. And my guest with me here in the studio, I should say, is Jerry Nachman, as always. If you have a question for us or an answer to one of our questions, give us a call at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Jerry, hit us with your best shot.
Oh, well, I'll try. According to the Wall Street Journal, what is the most expensive restaurant in San Francisco? It has features a $248 tasting menu that includes abalone liver and grilled bones. Yum, yum.
Grilled bones.
Bones, yeah.
That sounds good. I've certainly never eaten there. The most expensive restaurant in San Francisco.
I've never heard of it. But
you've never heard of it?
Shows you what circles I run in.
Oh, I expect you to.
No,
This is tailor-made for our listeners because they know these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I don't, and you don't, because we don't have enough class
Leah
would know. She's been there. I'm going to leave that out there.
Yeah, okay.
Repeat it again.
According to the Wall Street Journal, what is the most expensive restaurant in San Francisco? It features a $248 tasting menu that features abalone liver and grilled bones.
I like it.
Or something made from grilled bones, I guess.
You just eat the bones?
It's sauce made from grilled bones.
Okay. All right. If you know the answer to that, give us a call. And let's take a next call, please. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, is that me?
It's you. Absolutely. Welcome.
All right. Hi. I want to say for the New Yorker question, your first question.
Yeah.
I have two or three guesses. I'll start with the first. Joseph Mitchell?
No, Joseph Mitchell. No, no, this is fiction. He was a nonfiction writer.
Oh, fiction. Okay.
Fiction only,
E.B. White?
No.
And this last one, S.J. Perlman?
No.
Ooh.
That's
okay.
A good guess. That's an excellent guess. But no. This is not humor. Those are all humor writers. But, E.B. White was more than humor. But this is a non-humor writer.
But it's fiction. It's not, Roger Angel or somebody.
No, it is definitely fiction.
All right.
Fiction, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Good guesses, though.
Thanks.
Xavier calls us to say, is it James Thurber?
No, it's not a humor writer.
It's not a humor writer. Well, but
he didn't know that.
Yeah.
No,
all right.
Not a humor writer. That's a good guess also.
All right. Let's take the next
humor
call.
Humor is neither fiction nor nonfiction.
It's its own world.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, guys. I like the literary direction we're going.
Good. I got more.
It wouldn't be Dorothy Parker by any chance.
No.
She mostly wrote verse, no?
Well, she wrote a lot of short stories, and that's not a bad guess, but no.
Okay. I just threw that out because I was listening just now.
You're in the right ballpark, though.
To stay in the form, I've got one for Bay Area folk, because I think this one might have been written in Oakland, and it's a P.K. Dick story, Philip K. Dick.
Mm-hmm.
And probably all you sci-fi fans out there know, that's the Blade Runner and so on. But he's got one where this small company makes robots. They decide, because they're an organ-making company or something, and they figured out it's technologically set in the future, which for him was 1982. And they decide they're going to make robots, and the boss says, yeah, everybody loves the Civil War. Make Civil War robots. And so they make an Abraham Lincoln, but the question is, they also make a second robot, Civil War era, in the Philip K. Dick novel, We Can Build You. Can you tell me, what was the other robot?
Well, no, I haven't read it, but let's put our heads together and think about it. My first thought was, is it John Wilkes Booth?
Great guess. In fact, in the novel, hilariously, I think they try to build one and it blows up.
So it's somebody kind of off. I mean, then you'd
kind of have to have read it.
Yeah,
but it's a Bay Area one, I think. So, and again, I love this program. Thanks so much. I'm MT in Oakland, and I'll listen carefully for answers.
Okay, thanks. If you know the answer to that, or if you know the answer to the other questions, or have any questions for us, give us a call 415-841-4134. MT commended us for the literary bent, so I've got another literary question for you. I have the five names here that are title characters of famous novels, and I want you to tell me any of them that you can. What novel these people are the title characters of? There's five of them, as I say. One is Count Ladislav.
You don't mean title characters.
I do mean title characters.
So their name is in the title.
No. They're referred to in the title character.
That,
in other words,
that's what I mean. They're referred.
They are the title character, but not by name. In other words, if I said Bilbo Baggins, the answer would be Hobbit.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
So, what novel features this as the these people as the title character? Count Ladislaus de Almasi, Sarah Woodruff, Oliver Mellors, Michael Henchard, Valentine Michael Smith.
Well, the only one I know is Oliver Mellors, who's the guard, Lady Chatterley's lover.
That is correct.
The caretaker, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Oliver Mellors is indeed Lady Chatterley's lover.
And what were the other two?
Count Ladislaus de Almasi, Sarah Woodruff, Michael Henchard, and Valentine Michael Smith.
Henchard. Okay. Uh-huh.
All right. Okay. Well, you got one. You got the easy one. If you know, if anybody knows the others,
they always say that. You got the easy.
No,
one.
It was the easy one. It was the one you knew.
Yeah.
If you know those or any of the other questions that we've got hanging out there, give us a call. Let's go to a call right now. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, I'm calling about the New Yorker author, too.
Okay.
And I agree with Josh that it must be a John, and I think it's O'Hara.
You got it.
Well okay. Done.
You had a little boost from Joshua. Yeah, was it John O'Hara? Exactly.
Yes, and I'm wondering what your source is, because I just saw it.
The Wall Street Journal.
Excuse me, you said that. Yes, all
there's
right.
There's a guy who writes about books in there, and he book critic, I guess. He mentioned it, yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much.
Good.
Okay, well done. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Robert and Karen in Brenham Heights.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I remember you.
Yeah. So the most expensive restaurant in San Francisco, I think that's Cezanne.
Cezanne, it is. Have you been there?
We have been there when it was about a quarter of the price that it is now.
Oh, gee.
Where is it?
Where is it located? I never heard of it.
It used to be on Folsom Street, but now it's down Soma-ish. So I haven't been there since it relocated and got...
Has it been around a while?
It's been around for a few years.
What did you eat, and did you like it?
I thought it was overpriced then, and it was a lot less expensive than it is now.
You didn't have the abalone liver, huh?
Not that I recall. So we have a couple of guesses, other guesses.
Mm-hmm.
We're wondering if Count Ladislav de Almari is the Count of Monte Cristo?
No. Good guess, but no. The Count of Monte Cristo is Edmond Dantès, I think.
And Sarah Woodruff, is she the French lieutenant's woman?
Yes, she is.
Oh, all right. Good one.
And we have a question for you.
Excellent. We were hoping you'd say that.
In an obituary this past week, where is the Pitcairn Island Study Center located? And it's not on Pitcairn Island.
Oh, boy. God, when you said Pitcairn, I thought, I'm ready for this because I read the entire obituary.
Who was it?
Fletcher Christian's great-great-grandson, I didn't say enough greats, but...
great, great, great.
His direct descendant, somebody Christian. And the Pitcairn Island Study Center, is that what you said?
Yes.
So is it somewhere in the UK, which would be the obvious first guess?
It is not.
Okay. Don't tell me it's like here.
It kind of is.
Wow. Really? Well, where? I got to go there.
Not here.
Okay.
Here adjacent.
You mean like? San Leandro?
keep going north.
I don't think anything's in San Leandro.
I don't know where San
I'll
Leandro
is.
Tell me where it is. I got to get there.
It's in Angwin.
Yeah, you still got to keep going.
It's in Angwin, which is in the North Napa Valley.
How do you spell Angwin?
And do you know why it's in Angwin?
No. All right, let's think this out.
What was the predominant religion on...
Oh, because they're all Seventh-day Adventists.
That's right.
But I don't know how that
Angwin
helps.
Is a Seventh-day Adventist town with a Seventh-day Adventist hospital.
What's the name of the town? What's the name of the town, Robert?
Angwin, A-N-G-W-I-N.
Oh, okay.
It's on a hilltop above Napa Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be darned.
You can go there.
I certainly will. That's great. Thank you so much.
All right, guys.
All right, good night. Jerry, you got a question for us?
I always have a question.
I knew you would.
What and where is the Banzai Pipeline?
B-A-N-Z-A-I,
Banzai.
Yeah.
Pipeline. What and where is it?
I haven't a clue. Is it got something to do with, it's waves? Debbie says it's waves, but she's, I'm not sure what she means, but she's making a very interesting.
Gotta be much more specific.
She says he's got, you got to be more specific. She's making good gestures. She's doing a hula for us. It's very nice. But, okay. So it has nothing to do with, you know, Japanese militarism, per se.
No.
Okay. Well, it has something to do with waves, but we don't know. Jerry wants more specifics than that. So if you have those, call us and get us out of our quandary here.
Okay.
And let's take a minute and go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Hello? Anybody there?
Hung up.
No. Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, is it me?
It's you.
Hey, Michael Valentine, I'm calling from Berkeley.
Hi.
I believe that Michael Valentine Smith is the stranger in a strange land.
That is correct. Very good.
I don't know why I remember that.
It's a catchy name, isn't it? It's a memorable one.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're like me, you haven't read that book in 30 or 40 years, but it sticks.
Exactly. I read it in high school.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Mark in Walton, Oregon.
Hello, Mark.
And I had the answer Michael Valentine Smith, too, but I was too late.
Oh.
But I believe the Banzai Pipeline is on the north shore of Oahu.
Yeah, but what's the significance?
Oh, it's for surfing.
Well, I got to be even more specific. You're, that's right. Both those answers are right, but doesn't quite nail it for me anyway.
Well, I used to live up there. That's as far much as I know. I was around.
Well, it's distinguished by a certain distinguishing characteristic.
Oh, I don't know. It's probably a real perfect wave or something. But anyway.
Well, I'll give it to you. That's close enough. It's the world's supposedly the world's toughest surfing spot in Hawaii.
Oh. Yeah.
According to whom?
Oh, I don't know where.
Oh, you don't know?
I don't know where.
Yeah. You've never surfed it yourself, Jerry?
Oh, yeah, not
But
me,
you,
no.
Mike, you've surfed it. Is that what you... No, he went away.
And I haven't either.
No, you're still there.
No,
I
never went surfing there.
Okay.
I almost drowned once, and that was good.
Well, discretion is the better part of valor, I always say. Thanks for calling.
All right, well, thanks.
All right.
Yes, the Banzai Pipeline is the most difficult surfing spot in Hawaii, I guess.
Okay.
It's almost the world, possibly.
All right, here's a question for you. You'll know this one, Jerry. What are the most and least likely squares statistically to land on in a game of Monopoly?
The most and the least?
Yeah.
Oh. Why do you think I would know that?
You're a gambling man.
Well, okay, most. Let's see, most. Gosh, why would any? It's weird.
Why would they be different?
Why would they be?
Well, think about how the gameplay goes. Yeah. You come around, and a lot of times you get stuck on go. You come out of go. Out of jail.
Yeah.
Come out of jail. Where I read about this, it was pointing out that it's very rare. It's not the rarest, but it's a rare spot is to land on Park Place because it's
That's what I was going to guess.
It's rare because it's seven spaces past the go to jail.
It's also one of the few I could remember. So it's not Park.
It's not Park Place.
Okay.
No.
I don't know. Marvin Gardens.
Marvin Gardens is not correct.
Okay. I'm just throwing out the stuff.
You're just randomly guessing.
Reading Railroad.
No.
Okay.
All right, I'm looking for the most and least likely squares to land on in Monopoly, according to various statistical analyses. If you know the answer to that or to any of the other questions, give us a call at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Ed. How are you?
Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Very good. So I always like the question about rivers, the longest, the largest, shortest, narrowest, and widest.
Okay.
Let's start with the longest, the easiest one.
The longest?
Guess this one.
What's the longest river? I can never remember. It's the Nile, isn't it?
The Nile, I think.
It is the Nile.
Yeah.
Okay.
4,136 miles. How about the largest? Which means the amount of water.
You asked us this one.
That's surely the Amazon.
Definitely. Okay.
So good. We got the easy ones out of the way.
Okay. What is the... Let's go to the shortest. That is funny.
The shortest?
The shortest. Only 200 feet.
Didn't you ask us this?
Well, what's the
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But people get kicked out of
I wasn't
stuff.
Here. I wasn't here. Come on. Give me a break. So
feet.
What does that mean? Does that mean that by definition...
It's the Venetian River. It goes between two bodies of water. Or you don't... Yeah.
So oh, that's the definition. I didn't realize that was the definition of...
Yeah.
So there's a river...
This one is in the United States.
Come on, Jerry. You heard this one before.
Well,
I wasn't even here.
But
200-foot river...
I don't remember. I remember the question.
Okay. And then it stops. I don't know.
Okay. Well, it is called the Dee River in Auburn, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
D-E-E? Black capital D. D. Oh. Just D.
Just D, not even D-E-E?
No. Just
okay.
D. Okay. Narrowest, it's only 10 inches.
The narrowest is only
1,000 miles. It's 1,000 miles long, but only 10 inches wide.
The whole distance, it's only 10 inches wide?
Right.
Wow.
Jeez.
What can you tell us what country it's in?
It is China.
Hmm. Yeah, I know two Chinese rivers, and neither of them is it. So
yeah, okay.
I'm going to guess this is one I haven't heard of.
Yeah.
What is it?
Hui River in China.
Oh,
okay,
all right.
The last one is the widest, 65 miles wide.
It's the 65 miles.
Well, Ed, I'm shocked. You're into reruns.
No, come on, everybody gets it.
I tell you what.
We do it too, though. So that's
sure.
We do. You do reruns yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'll give you a new question, though. It is the.
I want to know what the wait a bit before we go to the new question. I need to know what the widest river is.
Rio do Plata in Argentina.
Oh.
Yeah.
I should have known.
Mild. Okay.
All right. Give us a new one.
Very simple question. Very simple question. All right. So if you are dressed or a woman dressed in a red. Dress, let's say a woman dressed in red dress, and she goes into a room with a green light, only green light, what color are other people to see her dress?
She's wearing a red dress, and she walks into a room with green light.
Only.
Only. Yeah.
And what's the question?
Yeah.
What color does it look like then?
Yeah, for people inside the room.
Yeah, this is basic optics, a subject about which I know nothing.
Basic optics, exactly.
Purple.
No, it's the other way around. It would be like...
Yellow.
The light is... I'm sorry, her dress is red. The light is green.
Right.
So it would have to be... Yeah, I would have said yellow. Is that wrong?
But remember, the emission of light against absorption.
Uh-huh.
When you see an object, you only see light that's been emitted. So if she had the red dress and she's in a room with white light... You only can see red because her dress absorbs all of the other colors. So if she goes into a room only green, what do you think her dress will look like? It's not going to reflect any color. It's going to look black.
It'll be black?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
No
reflection at all.
Oh.
The same thing goes if she have a green a green dress and she go into a room that is all red light. She also will look. Her dress will look black.
Very good. All right, I believe you. I believe you implicitly. I know you would never steer us wrong. Thank you very much. Thanks for calling. Right here at the halfway point, we're going to review the questions that we have, and then we're going to have a special surprise guest for us, for our listeners who have stuck with us this far as we've struggled along. Jerry, what questions do you have?
Mine have all been answered.
I think there was one at least that was... No? Really? All right. I am still looking for the name of the actor who played Federal Agent Ray Nicolette in two Elmore Leonard film adaptations, Out of Sight and Jackie Brown. And I'm looking for the title characters, the novels in which these people are the title characters. One is Count Ladislaus de Almasi, and the other is Michael Henchard. If you know those questions, the answer to any of those questions, please give us a call at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I've been here. I'm your guest moderator tonight, Joshua Cosman, and sitting in the studio with me is, of course, Jerry Nachman. But we also have a special surprise guest for you tonight. We didn't expect to see this person here tonight, but he is now in the studio. Would you say hello to our guests, please?
Thank you. The ransom has been paid, so I was able to come.
Well, we are so glad to see you. It is none other than, if you can't see over your radio set, this is Dana Rodriguez, who's usually here with us every week.
Mild-mannered Dana Rodriguez. Rodriguez.
The mild manager. Right? Yeah. I spent the last hour and 45 minutes waving at little kids who were waving at me in the car next to me on the bridge. So
this is interesting. Now, I of course, am a big Beatles fan, and so I have a great interest in any, you know, the Candlestick Park, I guess, is where they used to play. And I understand now that even after they stopped touring, Candlestick Park is still being used for other things. Is that right?
I think so.
Well, yeah. Well,
I mean, I just sort of figured it was a good Beatles concert hall, but I guess they do other things there as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, they have. I don't know when. Not now, I don't think. But I don't know.
Well, is there something happening there today, I mean, of some kind?
Yeah, there's an exhibition game today.
Okay.
Today.
That's right.
I think.
Well, enough of this idle persiflage. Give us a question.
I'll give you two questions.
Okay, two questions.
All right. First of all, thanks for sitting in, Josh.
Oh, it's a pleasure and a privilege.
And I apologize to everybody for being late, but if you're on the bridge, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I thought they closed the bridge early today then, maybe.
Well, it would have been about the same if they closed it or not, as far as traffic goes. All right, what was the first opera based on a Shakespeare play, and who composed it?
That's a good question. I think you asked me that once before, and I didn't know it then either. The first opera based on a Shakespeare play.
And who composed it?
I'll say Macbeth.
No.
No, it's going to be earlier than that, although... Do you have a year?
I do, but I think that would help you a little too much.
Just give me a century.
Pick a century, any century.
If it's 17th, it's not. It's 18th century then.
I'm not even going to give you a century.
After
Shakespeare's death.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to think about that. You guys talk amongst yourself. Give us another question.
So once more, what was the first opera based on a Shakespeare play, and who composed it? All right. Second question. Only three Democratic presidents have won majority votes in back-to-back elections. In the history of the Democratic Party, only three presidents have won majority votes in back-to-back presidential elections. So you have to name the three.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt would be at least two of them.
Well, he only counts for one.
Okay. He's one. And I think he's got to be the last. No, Obama won a majority both times, did he not?
Yes.
Okay, that's two.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
And
I'll stay out of this. You're on the roll.
No, I don't know. Did Clinton not win a majority? I can't remember.
Clinton did not win a majority back-to-back.
No. Which one did he not win? Just out of curiosity.
The first one. Remember, it was a three-way race?
I did not remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ross Perot and Bush and Clinton.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So we got to go back further, and that means I'm out of my depth.
All right. So once more, who were the three Democratic presidents who have won majority votes in back-to-back elections? All right. And so far we have FDR and Obama. Who is the third? And what was the first opera based on a Shakespeare play, and who composed it?
All right. So we have those questions out there, but before we do that, we've got a surfer on the line who's got some words to say to you, Jerry, about surfing. Let's take that call first.
I had a feeling I was out of my depth, so to speak.
Hello?
Hey, hello, you guys. You're killing me with this surfing stuff. You guys are so obviously not surfers and know nothing about it, except...
I didn't make it up. I read it somewhere, so it's not my fault. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, Bonsai Pipeline, which I've surfed many times, is on the North Shore of Hawaii. That guy was right about that. And what it has been famous for more than anything is it is a left, first of all. You know, you can go either right or left on a wave. Are you guys aware of that much?
Nope.
No.
Okay. We are, what is it, are we hoodads or ho-dads, or what is the
no,
word for...
No, you're worse than kooks. Remember, they call kooks the people that try to surf but can't. You know, the guys that show up and get sunburned and hit by their board.
Just landlubbers.
No, you guys are just dumb, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think you got it about right. What's the word for people who just hang out in the bar and watch from afar?
Well, I don't know about that. Let me finish about the pipeline, because the pipeline is a very famous place, and it's famous for a couple of things. First of all, it's a left, which is unique because most of the surfing goes to the right. And, you know, when you think about it, you'll figure out what the significance of that is. But it is a very, in the world, perhaps the most hollow wave, a wave that you can actually surf. You actually end up inside of the tube of the wave as you're riding.
Wow.
So
okay.
you get tubed. Tubed is a word meaning that you're actually all the way inside the tube of the wave. You're surfing, but you're in the wave.
Yes. Okay.
Sounds fun.
It's a tremendous high, and you come shooting out of it, and it's a very fast wave there. And, you know, a lot of people have gone there. I went there first when I was, must have been a freshman in high school. We went over, living in Southern California, went over for Christmas, rented a house right on Banzai Pipeline for $30 a month. And we rode every day. We rode the pipeline, and we were just kids, but we'd surfed all of our lives.
All right.
It was exuberating.
Sounds great. Thanks for setting us straight, and sorry we...
So ends our surfing.
Sorry we offended, gave offense. Thanks so much. All right. Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi there. Wow, guy was cool.
Yeah.
So the surfer dude seemed a little disrespectful now that I've met you all. Thanks for a great celebration last weekend.
Thank you
for coming.
This is Stephen and Sherry, or Sherry and Stephen in Berkeley.
Right.
Hi.
And we had a question that we brought with us, and I thought I would ask it now.
Okay, good.
So about 2 weeks ago, there was a author in the news, he became famous for sure, an author in the news who shares the name with a character in a well-known fantasy trilogy. Oh, I think it's a trilogy, yeah.
He did what with the fantasy?
So, once more, this well-known author shares his name with a character in a fantasy trilogy.
Yes, and
this author was.
I don't know if he was very famous before 2 weeks ago when he came out with his book, but he's very famous now, and of course the character in the trilogy is very famous from a long time ago.
What kind of writing does this person do? Fiction?
The author,
yes.
The current author.
Yes.
No, I don't consider this fiction. But I'll give you a hint. He was. I'm going to give you a big hint. We thought Ed would get the answer to this one. He was interviewed on Fox, and his book became a huge bestseller.
Oh, I know. I know.
Aslan.
You're trying to raise Aslan,
right?
Yeah.
Aslan from the
Chronicles of Narnia.
Right.
There you go.
Which is not actually a trilogy, but a septilogy. But.
That's right, but yeah,
but,
you got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay, very good. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
We wouldn't have gotten it without your hint, though.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Joel Bunga, dudes.
Hi. Hey. It's all surfing all the time here on Minds Over Matter.
No more surfing, please.
Come on. What do you got?
Yes, I've got an answer for the... for the Ray Nicoletta character in the two Elmer Leonard movies.
Bring it.
The gentleman that played Batman opposite Jack Nicholson was Michael Keaton.
Exactly so. Well done.
Oh, yeah, right.
I had never seen Jackie Brown. I've seen Out of Sight 3 or 4 times, and every time Michael Keaton does that uncredited cameo, I think, he's so great. Why aren't they crediting him? And then it turns out it's because he's playing he played the same character at the same time in a different movie, and there was a rights issue.
Yeah, Jackie Brown's a good movie.
I've got to see it.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Thanks so much.
All right.
Good. All right. Jerry, I think it's your time for a question, if you got one.
Okay, what is the most valuable coin in the world, and why?
It's the, what is it, the 1933 Liberty gold something.
Well, the year is correct, and that's not the name, but your...
Well, when we went off the gold standard, they were all recalled.
Right.
And so there's only... I think there were 60 that went into circulation, or something close to that, and then they managed to, I think there are only maybe a handful left now.
I think there are only two, actually.
Two?
Yeah, it's the so-called Double Eagle gold
Double
coin.
Eagle. Okay. Oh, right.
The Mona Lisa of coins, auctioned at Sotheby's in 2002 for nearly $8 million. It was struck in 1933, the year FDR took the U.S. off the gold standard, and it should not have been struck in the first place.
I am not a numismatist. So
it was worth $20 at the time.
Now it's worth about a.
Do we know who owns
it? $2 million or something?
$8 million, I just said.
$8 million?
Oh, excuse me. 2002 was worth $8 million.
Oh. Now it's been up since then.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Do you want to give us another one?
Yeah, I'll give you another one. What is Pacifica Radio's, our former host, most popular show?
They'll rue the day that they let us go.
Yeah. It could have been us if we'd stayed there.
I was going to say, is the show formerly known as Minds Over Matter?
No. Their most popular show?
Yeah.
Democracy Now?
Yes. With Amy Goodman.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Good.
Okay.
All right.
But that's basically the title of all their shows.
Settle down. Let's take a call and Dana can...
All right.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter?
Hi, guys. It's Alec in San Francisco.
Hi, Alec.
Man, I thought surfers were supposed to be mellow.
Well, yeah, right. You get stuff wrong and people... Yeah. I understand.
Settle down, dude.
All right.
So I have a guess about Count Ladislaw Steelmasi. I think this is wrong because I think the guy that I'm thinking of is a prince.
Okay.
But is he the leopard?
Ooh, good guess. But you're right. It's not him. I mean, you were right to think that you were wrong.
Yeah, thank you.
You get a backward bell. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question for you guys.
Uh-huh.
Other than 33 and a third, 45 and 78 RPM, record players have been manufactured with one other speed. I mean, commonly.
Yeah.
Early on, there were lots of weird speeds, but there's one other speed that's been common on consumer turntables.
You got a lot of old guys in the studio. We know this one.
Okay, so what is it, and what were those records used for?
Oh, so, well, I'm sorry, you said 33 and a third and 78
and 45. And the other one was 16.
The other one is 16. What was it used for?
Dana?
I don't know.
Oh, come
I
on,
never man. Had I never had a turntable with 16.
Oh, I did. I
did
had,
you?
Oh, yeah, I had all
when,
four of
when
these.
When was a 16? What,
I never
those,
used it, but
were
it
those
was...
maybe children's records? Those little children, those plastic
no,
children's
I think
records?
It's...
No, there may have been some, but so think about, so it's slower than the others, much, right?
Right.
To find out whether...
You couldn't really use it for music, because the fidelity would be low.
Oh, is it for take a letter, Miss Carstairs, that kind of thing? Office...
like a dictograph?
Like a dictograph, exactly.
No, but you're on the right track.
Is it to find out whether Paul is dead?
But it's for speeches, in other words. It's for recorded speech rather than music.
Right. So they use it for the spoken word, and they used to send around programs to radio shows.
All right.
On 16 RPM records. And then they realized that you'd get better results if you use 16-inch platters instead of, just making it really slow.
Okay.
But there was one other very novel attempt at using 16 RPM in the 50s.
Huh.
Which failed, but they did manufacture it.
In the 50s. For... No, okay. Did it have anything to do with the emergence of stereo or hi-fi?
No.
Okay.
It was an attempt to use records in a place they had not been used before.
A place they had not been used
Classrooms?
Before.
Nope.
That's not bad. Not been used before. No, we don't know.
Space.
Yeah.
It was in cars. A company made a system called Highway Hi-Fi. and so they tried to sell them so you could play records instead of just listening to the radio.
Man, if they get on your back for talking on the phone in the car now, can you imagine, wait a minute, I have to stop and change the record?
Flip it over, yeah.
That's great.
Surprisingly
well, didn't
enough,
catch, didn't catch on for that reason.
Every time the car hit a bump, it did indeed skip. They never sold too many of these systems. So.
Let me put on some mood music.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much.
All right,
Debbie
guys.
Says they had them in Edsel's.
Bye-bye.
Good, thanks so much. Dana, you want to stump us again?
All right, Jerry. You have to get all the answers to this, though. But I think you can do it.
Thank you.
All right. So there are many Broadway theaters. I'm talking about current Broadway theaters, remember? Okay. So I want you to give me the five Broadway theaters that are named after people who performed in a Broadway show.
Performed
in a Broadway show.
Yes. Can I take a crack at this? Or is this Jerry only?
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
There's a Helen Hayes Theater.
Yes, that is one.
Okay, thank you.
There you go.
I'm right here, you know.
Right. Is there still a Barrymore Theater?
Is
there still a Barrymore Theater?
There is not a... yes, there is a Barrymore Theater, but which one?
Well, John.
No.
No.
Lionel.
No.
Ethel.
Yes.
Drew.
All right.
Yes. Drew, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so there's three more besides those?
Three more. Yes. So I'm looking for all the Broadway theaters that are named after people who performed on Broadway.
Well, there was one, I don't know if it's still there. I don't think it's called the John Golden.
He was a composer.
He was, okay.
Yeah, somebody who trod the boards.
Marasco, is that still there?
No.
I don't think so,
mm-hmm.
No. Oh, who performed?
Mm-hmm. So the five Broadway theaters named after people who actually performed on Broadway.
Mm.
All right, think it over.
Yeah, I'll see, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So far, we have the Ethel Barrymore Theater and the Helen Hayes. So what are the other three?
Let's take a call and see who knows it.
All right.
Yes. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Is that me?
It's you.
Oh, I was saying Lionel earlier. Is it Lionel Barrymore? No, it's Ethel.
No, it's
Ethel Barrymore, right.
Oh, right, yeah. And then I had the Michael Keaton, but someone beat me to it.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to guess Othello on the first Shakespeare produced into an opera, because if it's after he's gone, it's the most sort of provocative, and I'm just going to stab
it. Oh,
it is not Othello.
No, and I just remembered what it is. It's a comedy of errors which was made into an opera by Stephen Sturace called L'Equivoci, which was in about 1780 something.
No, this is before that.
That was pretty good, though. You got
it. Was pretty good. Yeah,
I went to school for this.
But I'd never heard of that person, so you probably made.
Well,
it
he was he was a student of Mozart's, and his sister was.
I'm sorry, Carr. We didn't mean to step on you there.
Yeah.
You got anything else? No. Oh, I'm sorry.
Nope.
All right.
He went away.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take another call. Make up for it. Yes, you're on Minds Over Matter. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Me?
Yeah, yes. You.
Mayor of Casterbridge with Michael Henchard.
That is correct.
Very good.
Well
and
done.
This is a guess. Was Count Laszlo Dracula?
Ooh, good guess, but not correct.
Good guess, but not correct. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. So tell me the ones you have left out there.
So that's the one we have left. Count Ladislav de Almasy is the title character of a well-known novel.
It's not Stendhal or any...
It is not Stendhal.
So the name isn't given in the title. It's just described.
Right. The other ones we had were Sarah Woodruff, the French lieutenant's woman. Mm-hmm. Oliver Mellers was Lady Chatterley's lover. Michael Henchard, she just got the mayor of Casterbridge. And Valentine Michael Smith, who was the title character of Stranger in a Strange Land.
All right. Jerry, what do you have that hasn't been answered yet?
I don't have anything. It's not answered.
All right. Let me just ask these questions once more. Only three Democratic presidents in the history of the Democratic Party have won majority votes in back-to-back presidential elections. So far, we have Franklin D. Roosevelt and Obama. Who is the third in that list? What was the first opera that was based on a Shakespeare play, and who composed it? Both, obviously, the well-known play and a well-known composer. And there are five Broadway theaters currently, as of today, five Broadway theaters that are named after people who have performed on the Broadway stage. So we have, so far we have the Ethel Barrymore and the Helen Hayes. What are the other three?
I have one other outstanding question I asked. What are the most and least likely squares to land on in a game of Monopoly?
Least likely squares. Is there a utility involved?
No.
All right.
If you know the answers to those or any other thing that you've got on your mind, give us a call, and let's go to a call right now. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Good evening, and Sparky and Maddie, how are you all doing?
Sparky and Maddie, how you doing?
Hey, side note, those are some good reviews you've had of the Feldman Violin and Orchestra.
Oh, thanks.
Quartet.
That's a remarkable CD and a wonderful piece.
the Pearl or the Feldman?
Sorry, I didn't hear you say the Pearl. Yeah, I was talking about the Feldman, but the Pearl record is pretty terrific, too.
Yeah, that's on my wish list. I'll probably get in a few weeks. Theaters, Dana.
Yes.
Does the Richard Rodgers Theater count?
No.
No.
About Mary Martin?
There is no Mary Martin Theater.
There should be, though.
Well, they ought to build one. George M. Cohen.
There is no Cohen Theater. There used to be, but not anymore.
Okay. All right, a little quick question for you. Around 1962 or so, these kids got into a recording studio. They made a record, and they had called themselves the Pendletones. But when the record came out, a totally different title for the group was on it instead. What was the name of the group?
The Pendletones.
The Pendletones.
What year was this again?
1962.
Hmm. And the song was a hit? Do you?
Actually, it was.
How many in the group?
There were five.
Oh.
Debbie's guessing the Beach Boys, and I like it better now that you say there are five of them. Is that right?
Yeah, it was the Beach Boys.
Okay. Good.
This one was called Surfing, and they called themselves the Pendletones based on the shirts that they wore, but they figured, we'll just call them the Beach Boys.
Pendletones.
We did get a surfing question.
We yes.
The show is devoted to surfing tonight.
It's Surfing Safari.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, this one was Surfing.
No, I meant the show in general.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Anyway, we're done then.
All right, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, yeah, I think I know the one for the Amalshi, or however you pronounce it.
I don't know how to pronounce it. If you know what the book is, you're ahead of me.
It's The English Patient by Michael Ondaatje. Oh.
Well done.
That was the name of that guy.
Exactly right.
Yay! Okay.
Yay! We retire that question.
Okay. Thanks.
He was from Hungary in the
yeah.
book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. I've never. I don't know. I tried to read the book and I tried to watch the movie.
Vladislav is a Polish name.
Take it up with Ondaatje.
There used to be a booth theater, but I don't think there is anymore.
There is a booth theater still.
Is that one?
Yes.
Booth. Okay.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Where is it? Okay.
Well, I didn't have that.
That would be Edwin, though. I take it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
And whose turn is it anyway?
I guess it's my turn. Let's see if I got a quick one. Where is the largest tract of land in the world that is unclaimed by any nation?
Well, it can't be within the borders of a nation.
No.
So it has to be in a place like either Antarctica or the Arctic or something like that.
Antarctica is correct. Right. Do you know the name of it?
Queen Maud Land.
No.
I don't know.
It's Marie Birdland.
Why wasn't that?
Well, no, you weren't. No, you weren't. There's a joke there about Birdland, but I can't get it.
All right.
Real quick. All right. Let's take another call.
Lullaby of.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, this is Bill from Daly City.
Hi, Bill.
I'm guessing the earliest opera on a Shakespeare play, would that be The Faerie Queen by Henry Purcell?
It is not The Faerie Queen.
No. Oh, but it's... It's that, but no, the person. Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait, is that a Shakespearean play?
It's based on Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh.
This was actually written,
but it's a
semi-opera. I believe before that, and the Fairy Queen is really
is a semi-opera.
It's just taking characters out without really being an adaptation of it. You know, of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
So it's not a straight. It's not really a straight.
And you're saying you're looking for something before that, even.
I think so.
And a more traditional.
Yeah, opera. In a very much a straight ahead operatic version of a Shakespeare play. Yes.
Okay, and just to guess, is there a Julie Harris Theater on Broadway?
No, she died yesterday.
Yeah, died yesterday. Yeah. No, there is not.
Should be.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Goodbye.
And have American Airlines ever been on the stage? No.
There was a, yeah, right.
All right. All right. Let's take another call.
Okay.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Judy from Berkeley.
Hi, Judy.
I met you last week. I didn't
yes.
meet you, Jerry, but hello, everybody.
Hi.
I'm guessing, except I don't know the name of the space, but most likely place to land in Monopoly would be Seven Spaces from Go.
Well, you would
Seven
spaces from Go is a chance space, but it's not actually the most common because you're more likely to get knocked out. You're mostly what affects it is you get sent to jail and then you come out of jail and that's where you sort of start the count from. You only start from Go the one time.
Oh, and you're going to go to jail more than once.
And you're going to go to jail a lot of times.
They are, yes.
So, yeah.
And then I have a comment. I wasn't a teenager in San Francisco, so I wasn't here then, but I believe the Beatles played the Cow Palace, not Candlestick Park. I do think there was something in the news last week that Paul McCartney said he wanted to play Candlestick Park.
Oh, they were definitely at Candlestick Park.
Oh, yeah, they played Candlestick Park.
Absolutely.
That was their last concert.
That was the
last live concert. Okay, famously. Yeah.
Yes, well, as you know, I have a mind for trivia, and August 23rd was one of my anniversaries of seeing the Beatles in 1966.
Oh, wow.
In New York. Anyway. Okay.
Good.
Good night.
Thank you. It was nice to meet you, too.
Dana, isn't there a Henry Hughes Theater, a Henry something Theater?
No.
Henry Higgins Theater.
No.
All right. Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Hello.
Hi, this is Josh from Corvallis, Oregon.
Hi, Josh.
Hi. Just one quick correction to, I think it was asked last week by Thomas about the state of Jefferson.
All right.
Yeah, he said it was in Northern California, but actually, the distinctive thing about it is that it's Northern California and Southern Oregon. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's still, people still talk about it a lot. And there's a radio network that I'm quite fond of after KLW, which is JPR, Jefferson Public Radio.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Main station in Eugene, Oregon, and also a number in Southern California.
Right.
So that's just a brief correction on that. A couple of quick questions.
Maybe one question.
One is good.
We're almost out of time.
Okay, which two classic Star Trek characters appeared in the same Royal Shakespeare performance of a play by Shakespeare?
The characters, you say, or the actors?
The actors.
Oh, all right, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, are we talking about Patrick Stewart then? No. Original Star Trekkers.
Original. Gielgud and Richardson?
Not in the original Star Trek, no. Oh, boy. Who would this be? No, we don't know.
I can tell you the play if you want.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Anthony and Cleopatra.
Ooh. Still doesn't help.
No.
It was filmed. That's how I saw the performance.
Who was in it?
Film performance of Royal Shakespeare.
You better tell us because we don't know.
Okay. It was Nichelle Nichols, Guru, and Walter Koenig.
Which is who?
Oh, the Chekhov.
Oh.
Chekhov, yes.
All right.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's clean up, Jerry. You're clean. Dana, you're full of unanswered questions.
The only three Democratic presidents who have won majority votes in back-to-back presidential elections, FDR, Obama, and Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson.
Okay.
What was the first opera based on a Shakespeare play, and who composed it was The Tempest by Purcell.
Oh, okay.
1695, I believe. And the list
Not
of-
likely. He was dead in 1659.
Oh. So. Well, anyway, it was 1659. List of Broadway theaters that are named after people who had performed on Broadway, the Ethel Barrymore, the Vivian Beaumont. Nobody got to Vivian Beaumont.
Oh, yeah.
The Booth, the Helen Hayes, and the L'Enfantin.
Oh, yeah.
The likeliest square on Monopoly is Illinois Avenue. The least likely square is Mediterranean Avenue. And that winds it up for us. If we didn't get to your call, we do apologize. We'll be here next week. Dana will be back.
I'll try to be on time.
That's what he says now. We'll believe it when we see it. Thanks so much for listening. Good night.